While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia, make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and today we yet mark another day on the calendar, being Tuesday, the 24th of March, 2026. Now, as we mark World Tuberculosis Day, we take a moment to reflect on one of the key public health challenges facing Namibia and the global community, while also tracking the broader developments shaping our nation. Now, this afternoon, we continue to follow major stories making headlines, from public health and economic developments to governance, innovation and youth empowerment. Those are the issues influencing not only national policy, but also the everyday lives of Namibians across the country. Over the next 90 minutes, we'll unpack the latest news and provide deeper insight into the decisions, the trends and the events driving Namibia's progress. Our focus remains on going beyond the headlines, helping you understand what those developments mean in practical terms, both now and in the months ahead. Now, in a fast-changing world, staying informed is essential. Through this program, we aim to bring you credible information, meaningful analysis, and conversations that matter. Wherever you're listening from this afternoon, whether it's rooted, Hobabas, or Kahanja, Otapi, Karasber, Opur, or right here in the heart of Windhoek, we appreciate you for joining us. This is On the Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM, keeping you informed, engaged, and connected to the issues shaping our nation. Now let's get right into today's top stories. As the world pours to celebrate or to remember or to commemorate World Tuberculosis Day, the Namibia Institute of Pathology has reaffirmed its commitment to helping Namibia achieve a TB-free future through expanded access to diagnostic services and advancing testing technologies. Commemorated under the global theme, Yes, We Can End TB, led by countries, powered by people, the day highlights the importance of national leadership and community involvement in combating tuberculosis. NIP emphasized that ending TB is achievable through early detection, accurate diagnosis, and timely treatment. The institution plays a central role in Namibia's healthcare system, ensuring that reliable diagnostic services are accessible across the country. Currently, TB testing is available at 89% of its laboratories, covering all 14 regions, with additional sample referral systems in place for facilities without testing capacity. Now, tuberculosis remains a major public health challenge in Namibia. However, NIP noted that strengthening laboratory systems is critical to interrupting transmission, thereby improving patient outcomes and supporting national disease surveillance efforts. Now, during the 2025-2026 financial year to date, NIP says it has conducted 108,663 TB-related tests, reflecting the scale of diagnostic demand and the country's strategic focus on early detection and treatment monitoring. Of those, it says 76.1% of them, which being 82,697 tests, were conducted using Gene Expert technology, the recommended first-line diagnostic tool for rapid TB and drug-resistant detection. 12.2% of those tests were microscopic tests, mainly used to monitor patient progress during treatment. And 11.1% of that involved TB culture and drug sensitivity testing, essential for detecting complex and drug-resistant cases. 0.6% of those were line, which is 620 tests, were line probe assays used for advanced drug resistance analysis. Now, specialized testing included culture and sensitivity analysis in conducting or was conducted at the National Reference Laboratory in Windhoek to ensure that even the most complex cases are accurately diagnosed and managed. NIP says it continues to support clinicians with high quality, timely results, enabling informed treatment decisions and improved patient care. Now, Namibia strengthened its fight against tuberculosis. NIP says it remains at the forefront of the national response, providing the diagnostic backbone needed to detect, to monitor, and ultimately eliminate the disease. Now, on this, I caught up with NIP's Manager of Corporate Affairs, that is Mr. Johannes Clements, to speak furthermore on the importance of early and accurate diagnosis of tuberculosis. Let's take a listen to that. Good afternoon to you, Mr. Johannes Clements, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Good afternoon, Happy, and thank you for having me online.
Sure, pleasure is all mine. Of course, today the world comes together to celebrate World Tuberculosis Day, with this year's theme being Yes, We Can End TB. And of course, NIP has its part to play in this ending of tuberculosis with early diagnosis and accurate diagnosis. Perhaps tell us about how NIP actually plays its part in accurate diagnosis of tuberculosis.
Okay, let me start at first by saying that what is NIP? Namibia Institute of Pathology, we are a medical laboratory. We are a public enterprise, a commercial public enterprise. We were set up through Act of Parliament, and we are basically responsible for providing medical laboratory services.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to diagnosing of diseases, this is where we play our part as NIP, where we would be performing tests that we receive from the various health centers, clinics, hospitals, or even private doctors, where they would send patient samples to NIP. We would then test those samples and provide the results back to the clinicians or to the health centers where they originated from, in terms of giving them what exactly is wrong with the patient or what those test results then say, the outcome of those results. So when it comes to TB, we actually then perform TB testing at our laboratories. So the samples would be requested by the doctors. They come to NIP. We would test them. And if they are TB positive, we would inform the doctors and also inform the people to basically then get the patients back so that they can initiate them on treatment and basically stop the spread of TB.
Interesting. You speak about doctors requesting such tests. Just for curiosity's sake, should I perhaps see symptoms of tuberculosis on myself or someone close by? Can I perhaps come to NIP offices to come and get them to test me without passing through a doctor?
Unfortunately, you won't be able to come directly to NIP. You still need to go through a doctor, and the doctor is the one that actually then requests on our requisition form what tests need to be performed at NIP. The doctor now looks obviously at the symptoms that you are having. Maybe you've been having night sweats, you've been coughing for a number of weeks. And then based on that clinical picture that the doctor sees in front of them, they then choose.
Wahala kukutha mbinga, mesindano joshimaro kuzapo mawabi umiongo hitatu ukapo mbanda. Shangika ano ngundoe yetanga, mama tigathana wotza ya kuku Easter Tournament, chura kaika karako mamasuku wa tatu, sigo wakamano wapi umpogo tungu. Poka parike tanga, kotza ya kuku Meheke District. Umaudhano ga unjuka, adhana ate kwa opo ya kareri kuhiyo umvura umiongo ndatu na tanu, monote avuro kusindana ushimaro shumabu umiongo hamano na ntano kwa umuma. Shangika ano ngundoe nina, kia uvilingwe, numathiri gane, numilongo ntano avike tuti. Kwa mbono ina omvura omirongo ndatu na hamano shuka pumbanda, otamu kusa ombinga, mo legends category, category kaa kukire, mono to sindana shumarwa omaovi omulongo na kheali, no mathiri katano kwa umuma. Shangi thandu no ngunduwe, no mathiri katano keovi alike tuti. Ukadonu ugunjuka. Saya kuku annual Easter tournament, na naine mpatira konje, shangi thano ongunduwe, no mathiri katano, no dara o mathiri katano alike tuti. Kuma uyere gawe wako, dengela nakapa, kunore mafeta tunoimwe, oimwe none, ombariali, ontano, nandatu no hamano. Nenge kudasuva, kono mba mafeta tunoimwe, uheali nandatu, ndatu heali, kongoi, nandatu heali.
The doctor sees in front of them, they then choose which tests NIP should perform. It's just like sometimes we get a lot of questions by people just asking, if I want to just see what I'm allergic to, can I come to NIP? Unfortunately, you can't. You still need to go through a doctor. The doctor requests the tests. We do the tests. We perform it. We give the result back to the doctor so that the doctor sits down and discusses this result with you. And also in terms of initiating any medication for treatment, should that be required, then they can initiate the treatment so that you basically then become better at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the significance of this year's theme to NIP, that is being Yes, We Can End TB, led by countries and powered by the people?
Yeah, so the official theme for this year, it's basically, it's highlighting that TB, we can end TB, and it's really shifting towards country-led initiatives. And that's why it's saying led by countries, meaning it's the countries that are leading the end to TB, and it's powered by people, meaning that It's all of us. It's not just a national leadership that is there. It's not just Ministry of Health and Social Services, but you also need to engage the different communities, partners, and stakeholders basically then to eliminate TB. And the reason why we're looking at Yes, We Can End TB is because there is actually a World Health Organization End TB strategy, which is a global framework that's actually aimed at ending TB by the year 2035. So that is basically what we are working towards in terms of ending TB by the year 2035. So if we get there earlier, we can pat our backs and then. But that is basically where we are moving towards, where the WHO has an NTB strategy, which basically leads countries or advises countries how you should be able to get to ending TB globally.
Mm. Talk to us about the number of tests or TB-related tests that NIP conducted for the 2025-2026 financial year.
Yeah. So we've conducted 108,663 TB related tests. Now these obviously differ in terms of what is being done. Out of those TB related tests that we've done, the majority was gene expert tests. This accounted for 76.1%. And this was about 82,000 tests that were run on GeneXpert. So GeneXpert is a machine that we have, or what we call it. Basically, it's a rapid detection machine. So it helps us to detect TB and drug resistance as well. And basically then with those results, patients can then be initiated on treatment, the right treatment, because when we're talking about drug resistance, you must remember that the medication that you get, sometimes the bacteria that causes the TB is actually resistant to this medication. And this gene expert now, to simplify it, your results, you would get results, and then you'd also indicate whether it's now resistant to certain medication that is supposed to be used to be treating TB. So this is being done at So we are testing at out of our 37 laboratories, we are able to do TB testing at 33 of those laboratories,
mm-hmm.
and that is that's basically 89%. But we are covered. We have a lab in every single region of Namibia, so we are able to do TB testing in every single region. The four laboratories that are unable to do TB testing, the one laboratory is here at our head office, and then the second laboratory is Katutura NIP. But those two laboratories, when we receive samples that are TB-related, they get sent to our national reference laboratory, which is our biggest laboratory, and it is based at in the Windhoek Central Hospital complex.
Mm.
The other two laboratories that are not doing TB testing is at Ongwediva Medipark, but those samples then go through to Oshakati for testing because Ongwediva Medipark is a private laboratory,
mm-hmm.
and also Kondangwa Private Laboratory. Those samples then get tested at Onanjokwe. So there are mechanisms in place for those four laboratories that are not performing the TB testing. But otherwise, we are covered. 100% of the country is covered in terms of regional testing of TB.
Mr. Clemens, how do you see perhaps accurate and timely diagnostic results support clinicians? And how does strengthening diagnostic systems contribute to national disease surveillance, such as TB surveillance?
Well, you need accurate results and timely in the sense that the clinician needs to initiate the correct treatment
mm-hmm.
based on the result that they receive. So if you are getting inaccurate results, it basically then means that the clinician cannot treat the cause, what is actually causing you to get sick. So in terms of the accurate results, we would be getting, if we get a TB positive case, then we know 100% for sure that yes, it is TB, and then the doctor treats you for TB. So in terms of that, it also, in terms of just having it, getting that result on time,
mm-hmm.
and the doctor or the clinician initiating the treatment on time, it also lowers the risk of this patient going back into the community and spreading the disease further, because you must know that TB is airborne, so it can be spread through aerosols, which are caused when you either sneeze, you cough, or something like that. So you basically cutting or eliminating, reducing that chance of that person spreading it. And as soon as they are put on treatment, and that treatment starts working, it basically then makes them less, or the risk is much lower for them to spread that disease.
Okay. But then what message is the Namibia Institute of Pathology conveying today on World Tuberculosis Day?
So from NIP's side, we just want to reassure the nation that as the largest medical laboratory service provider in Namibia, we remain central in terms of the national response to tuberculosis, and that through our network of 37 laboratories and us reaching more than 85% of the population, we are still the ones who are providing the backbone that is required basically to detect, monitor, and ultimately help towards eliminating TB in Namibia. So from an accessibility point of view, we are accessible in all 14 regions, and we will always be able to provide the best service that we can towards the Namibian nation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And of course, Mr. Clemens, how I think this would have been, this is what is also an important question to ask. How long does it take for when a doctor actually requests for a laboratory test, for instance, a TB test, and for them to actually get that result? How long does that probably take, approximately?
Yeah. Okay. So with the different tests, we have different turnaround times. So in terms of for TB, I can just speak to a few of the tests, like for gene expert testing. And this turnaround time that we are measuring is from the time that it reaches the laboratory, because sometimes we have no control over from the time that it is requested by the clinician till it is then delivered at NIP laboratory. Where we are able to pick up, collect samples, we are then supporting the Ministry of Health in terms of collecting those samples. But as soon as that sample gets to the laboratory, for gene experts, that is 48 hours, the acceptable turnaround time. So it can be less, but that is the turnaround time that we give that. Within 2 days, you should be able to get your results. The microscopy part, where they look under a microscope to see whether they are mycobacterium tuberculosis bacteria, that is also 48 hours. And then we also have a culture. Culture is where we actually grow the bacteria. It takes a bit longer because we actually grow the bacteria, the TB, the bacteria itself. And this is, TB is a very, very, very slow growing bacteria. So the turnaround time is up to 6 weeks. It's only after about 6 weeks, we'll be able to then say that if a patient sample was sent in for culture, mm-hmm. to actually see if we grow the bacteria itself, that will be 6 weeks. And then looking at other tests, some of those also are between 72 hours and 2 weeks. And then maybe to also just add mm-hmm. on in a sense that we traditionally know that when you do come and go to a doctor, they would usually ask you to go and produce a cough, and that is you basically cough, and then that which you cough up is what gets sent to NIP. Now we must remember that sometimes babies and children, sometimes it's very, very difficult to get a child to cough and produce that a nice sample for testing at NIP. So for the babies, for children up to the age of 11, there is a test where we are actually testing the stool. It's also on the gene expert, but then we are testing the stool to see whether that child is actually having TB, because if you only depend on the child producing that a proper result, yeah. a proper specimen, I mean, not a result, but a proper specimen from coughing, mm-hmm. It's not going to give you the right result. So NIP is actually doing gene expert testing, but this is done on stools for children up to the age of 11.
Interesting. Mr. Johannes Clemens, thank you so much for making time for us. I learned a thing or two today in regards to laboratory testing, and I trust that my listeners also have learned something. So thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Okay, thank you very much, Happy, and thank you for having me on there.
Okay. Meanwhile, the Minister of Health and Social Services, that is Dr. Esperanza Lumindao, has reaffirmed Namibia's commitment to eliminating tuberculosis, calling for strengthened diagnostic, early detection and collective national action. Now, speaking at the World Tuberculosis Day commemoration in Gobabis, Minister Lumindao said Namibia has made significant progress but must intensify efforts to achieve a TB-free future. And I quote, today we join the global community under the theme, Yes, We Can End TB. Pardon me. I quote, today we join the global community under the theme, Yes, We Can End TB, led by countries, powered by people. This is not just a message of hope, but a call to action. Ending tuberculosis in Namibia is within our reach if we act decisively and collectively, she said. The minister highlighted the critical role played by the Namibia Institute of Pathology Limited in strengthening the country's diagnostic capacity. She noted that access to reliable and timely testing remains central to controlling and ultimately eliminating TB. Early detection, accurate diagnosis, and timely initiation of treatment are the cornerstones of our national response. Now, without strong laboratory systems, we cannot effectively break the chain of transmission, she emphasized. Now, according to the minister, TB testing services are now available in 89% of NIP laboratories covering all 14 regions, and ensuring that even patients in remote areas can access essential diagnostic services through sample referral systems. She further revealed that during the 2025-2026 financial year, Namibia has conducted over 108,000 TB-related tests. And she said these figures reflect our commitment to early detection and continuous patient monitoring. Early tests conducted brings us one step closer, or every test conducted brings us one step closer to controlling this disease and protecting our communities, Lumindao said. Now, despite ongoing efforts, tuberculosis remains a significant public health concern in Namibia. The minister stressed the need for continued investment in healthcare systems, community awareness, and collaboration across sectors. And I quote, ending TB requires more than government action alone. It requires communities, healthcare workers, and partners to work together in order to ensure no one is left behind, she said. Now, the commemoration in Gobabis brought together healthcare professionals, community leaders, and stakeholders to raise awareness and strengthen coordinated efforts in the fight against TB. Minister Lumindao concluded by urging all Namibians to take an active role in combating the disease, and she calls on all Namibians to say, let us remain committed, informed, and united, because together we can end tuberculosis in Namibia. Now, tuberculosis is a bacterial infection that primarily affects the lungs and spreads through the air when an infected person coughs, sneezes, or speaks. It's one of the deadliest infectious killers if not diagnosed and treated early. Now, let's get into understanding drug-resistant tuberculosis. As you have heard, Mr. Johannes Clemens mentioned some tests, or even some tests that test for TB drug resistance. Let's now understand what drug-resistant tuberculosis is and how it is managed. Now, tuberculosis being a bacterial infection caused by Mycobacterium tuberculosis usually affects the lungs. While TB is curable with proper treatment, improper use of TB medications can lead to drug-resistant forms of the disease, which are more difficult to treat and pose serious public health challenges. Now, drug-resistant TB occurs when the TB bacteria survives despite treatment with standard anti-TB drugs. Now, there are different types of drugs, one being the multi-drug resistance TB, also known as MDR-TB, which is resistant to the most powerful first-line TB drugs, isoniazid and rimpicin. Now, extensively drug-resistant TB also known as XDR-TB, is resistant to isoniazid and rifampicin plus other drugs in at least one of the second line injectable drugs. And then we have rifampicin resistant TB, which is also abbreviated as RRTB, which is resistant to rifampicin with or without resistance to other drugs. Maybe wondering what actually causes a drug to be resistant. Now, drug resistance can develop due to incomplete or irregular treatment, that is, by one missing their doses or stopping their treatment early. Now, usually, healthcare workers emphasize, whether doctors or nurses, emphasize on finishing the course or the treatment for TB, even when the patient feels healthy again. That is to help combat and to help actually restrict the resistance of the drug. Incorrect prescription of TB drugs can also result in the drug being resistant. Also, the poor quality of medication can also result in drug resistance and the transmission of already drug-resistant TB from another person can also cause now the person who has, whom the TB has been transmitted to also become resistant to the drugs. But fortunately, there are drug-resistant medications that are also the to help those who have become drug-resistant. Now, it's a concern when there is drug resistance because they become harder to reach as treatment is no longer more complex. The treatment becomes longer, it becomes more complex, and it requires stronger medications. And there's also a higher risk of complications as some drug resistance can cause severe lung damage and also other health issues and therefore increase public health risk as it can spread to others if it is not properly managed. Now, drug-resistant TB is diagnosed in the following ways. Early diagnosis is very crucial, and there are certain common methods that include GeneXpert test, which is a rapid detection of TB and rifampicin resistance, and there's also culture and drug susceptibility testing, also abbreviated as DST, and this confirms resistance to multiple drugs. And then there's line probe analysis, also known as LPA, which detects specific drug resistance patterns. Now, and there is a management structure, and the management and treatment of drug resistance TB is as follows. There's the second line medications. Drug resistance TB is treated with drugs not normally used for standard TB, which includes new medicines like betaquiline and linezolid, and there's also longer treatment duration. Now, while TB-sensitive TB usually requires 6 months of treatment, some can actually take 9 to 24 months. That is now the ones that act on against the TB resistance. They can take up to 9 to 24 months, depending on the severity of it. Directly also observed therapy, especially for those patients who miss their drugs, causing them to become drug resistant. Now, healthcare workers are then sent to monitor patients taking their medication in order to ensure adherence of such. And if you have actually come to notice in communities, you will find in some of the communities, you find certain places where they are specifically for TB testing and also for TB counseling, I suppose, and also to also help those who are already taking their a TB medication for them to actually adhere to their medication, maybe to ensure also that they are accurately taking those. There is particularly one in my community, which I believe is very good because it helps also in monitoring and assessing the situation on the ground, whether patients are taking their medications, and it helps fight and actually put an end to the end of spreading of TB and then the end of TB as well. As well as supportive care could be another aspect of management in terms of nutrition, mental health support, and management of side effects are also essential. And then there is infection control, whereby patients may need isolation and most times actually need isolation during the most infectious phase in order to prevent transmission. Now, if you can remember, for those who can quite remember, there are times where we were also taught, you know, that time when you are actually in school, for instance, as a learner, you're taught that you shouldn't share the same cup with somebody who is diagnosed with tuberculosis, because it spreads so easily through sneezing, through cough, and all that. Now, prevention of TB drug resistance is to complete completion of TB treatment as prescribed, regular follow-up with healthcare providers, early testing if TB symptoms do appear, and also the use of rapid diagnostics to identify drug resistance early enough. Now, drug-resistant TB is serious but a manageable condition. Early detection, proper treatment, and adherence to medication are crucial to curing the patient and preventing transmission, and also reducing the development of further drug resistance. Now, strengthening laboratory capacity and public awareness are also equally important in order to protect communities and also achieve a TB-free future. And I believe that a TB-free future is possible and is attainable. And this year's theme speaks to led by countries and empowered by the people. I think it speaks rightly to the heart of how it should be done. Countries need to play their part, and significantly play their part in ensuring that TB is eliminated. They have, by countries, I believe, it refers not only to the government, but as well as to the people themselves, whether companies or whether stakeholders such as the NIP, which deals with testing or actually diagnosing this TB, and then clinicians having to act on it. They have their parts to play as well, and individuals as well have their parts to play, for most especially when one has been diagnosed with TB, or perhaps sees the symptoms or feels the symptoms of tuberculosis, and then promptly, early enough, goes to the hospital for testing, so that they, if they are positive, then they get initiated on treatment early, and the most important part, finishing their course or finishing their drugs or their medication that is prescribed to them, and adhering to those instructions that are given out to them, whether it's instruction to say, stay away from close proximity of people, especially in the early infectious stage, or perhaps adhering to actually staying at the hospital, whereby they are perhaps intended to be isolated from people, because that is the way to actually prevent, you know, spreading of it. Now, another takeaway point also that I do remember very well that healthcare providers often say is that they do say that if you notice that you've been coughing for 2 weeks, or you notice somebody who has been coughing for 2 weeks or more, it is very important to tell that particular person to get themselves tested for TB. That way they get treated early and we reduce the spread of a TB. Now, the takeaway message is the theme for this year being, yes, we can end TB, led by countries, powered by the people. Therefore, you also have your part to play. Nonetheless, this is On The Reading News Analysis. Today, I believe we're going more into health matters, but nonetheless, Let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. 083-288-4001 is the number in studio. Perhaps you would want to share with us how you were diagnosed with TB and actually got cured, and what you did that actually helped in you being TB free now. For any contributions, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. We pause here, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal. Scandal.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no, why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the meme with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily, with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewetike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM. The eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Now in other news, South Africa universities are revising assessment policies following an increase in generative artificial intelligence related academic misconduct in assignment tests and online exams. Now institutions including the University of Johannesburg, University of South Africa, UNISA, University of Pretoria, UP, and the University of Cape Town, UCT, reported cases of students using tools such as ChatGPT, Google Gemini, and Microsoft Copilot without proper disclosure or in violation of assessment rules. Universities say most incidences occur in take-home assignments, online quizzes, coding tasks, and written assessments, while fewer cases are recorded in invigilated or campus exams. Now, the University of Pretoria recorded about 53 AI-related disciplinary cases between 2024 and 2025, while UNISA and the University of Johannesburg says incidents are identified through academic integrity monitoring systems and departmental reviews. Now, institutions note that AI detection tools alone are not reliable and are instead using evidence such as drafts, version histories, student declarations, and oral verification to confirm authorship. Now, the UCT has discontinued the Turnitin AI score feature and is focusing on redesigning assessments. And Turnitin is actually a tool for submitting assignments and actually scores where the source of this particular assignment is from. For instance, if a student copied within their assignment a certain part from a certain book, Turnitin then picks it up, or is supposed to pick it up and actually highlight that so percentage of this was from this particular source. Now, universities say AI misuse is treated under existing academic misconduct frameworks with penalties ranging from warnings and failing grades to suspension in serious cases, while some institutions emphasize education and transparency. But in a transparency on acceptable AI use. Now, today's AI-driven world, it is crucial to address AI-related cheating because it undermines academic integrity and devalues genuine learning. When students rely on AI tools without proper understanding or credit, they miss out on developing critical thinking, problem-solving, and communication skills, which are essential for success in the actual real world. Even when certain educators or perhaps students put out posters to say, reach out to this particular number to get assistance with your assignment, I see that as a cheating code, because at the end of the day, the student doesn't walk away with the learning requirements or capacity that was intended for them to have, as opposed to what they were supposed to have. They now go out and actually have somebody do the assignment for them. And when in the real world, they're now intended to apply the knowledge and the skills that they have learned, they will not be able to do that because of the of the way they conducted that particular assignment. The learning tools that the learning outcomes that they were supposed to have, they don't have it because they themselves did not do that particular assignment. Hence why universities are revising assessment policies to focus on authentic learning, encouraging students to use AI as a tool, not as a crutch or not as a overall overrider of their work. Now, by doing so, they are preparing students for a future where AI is integral to industries, but human skills like creativity, empathy, and complex decision makings are still invaluable. Hence why there is definitely a need to curb this. I'm sure they will eventually, most especially because dealing with media and technology, I certainly do believe that there will be an alternative way to actually combat and see how many students are using AI tools. Might not be Turnitin, but Turnitin is, I think, just one of them, although one of the university says they have now discontinued the use of Turnitin. Probably a certain tool will definitely come up to combat such. And of course, emphasis still lies on perhaps also since it's students, and some of them are obviously adults, but I think emphasis still lies on perhaps parents, guardians, leaders. Awareness needs to be made to the students themselves to stay away from AI tools, because it reflects not your own work, not to stay away entirely, I rephrase that, but rather for, when it comes to assignments and tests, perhaps to rather use it as something to enhance their work and not necessarily as a complete tool to generate the information that is required or expected from them. Nonetheless, do come in with your contributions on this. That is on 083-288-401. We're not saying do away with AI, but rather use it in a responsible manner. Let the work generate with you, and rather AI enhances it. But none still, other than that, it is always necessary also to revise it and see where you can better undo it or better align it with what you are thinking of or with your creativity and what your skills. Nonetheless, let's pause right here. 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihoetike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendite nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for news for economic indicators before we get into news beyond the borders of Namibia. We're starting off with the US dollar. One US dollar today is equal to 16.91 Namibian dollars, and one Australian dollar is equal to 11.78 Namibian dollars. One United Arab Emirate dirham is equal to 4 Namibian dollars and 61 cents. And £1 sterling is equal to 22 Namibian dollars and 61 cents. One Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 22 cents. We'll pause here again to make room for a scheduled commercial break. We'll be back with news beyond the borders of Namibia. Do stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata
Efiloshisho utali kulandula kona ave wayuka. Ekwashili palekolo maruendo paiwana kupitila mo NHB. Watupa teleko meshwe kwashili palekolo afika mafio pedola emiliona omlongo da Namibia. Moshi yoshe tukeshe kuyanja omakwafo unamiti enashane filoshisho lopa ulumo mumbu. Kwa avoveli ponjeo shilongo, shijoshi topo rwasho ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe banando ishoshe layashi. Opo umone ya kulolo polis mwule ominute disho naelela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya moruendo. Ponjeo shilongo. E mangono malandula fano, odo dino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Kapena we sharadhingiri okui nyanyudha karisho mawadha no wokomvo otea kuku Easter Soccer Tournament mwike ndanjono erondo. Tuwaimina anopoka pari kwa mawadha no kotea kuku mwishitopo rasha Eheke District tetu nyanyu kilo nipamu. Shinasha nuhundunda wa mangeshefero halandesha radio yomarandi thiro kondando wa shike ochimari wa chondora matere gerigatano. Shinasha nuhere na tangu wa wedo wapo kwa tathana na akapa kongodhi honora wa heta toa imu eriari. One on Barriari, on Nano, on Datuno Hamano, Opoi Monene, Esharari Embara.
In the Fenawa, Nokumona Oijawari Nawa, Ninge Patafanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM.
Welcome back, and now for news beyond the borders of Namibia. We start off regionally, move over to continental news. Thereafter, international news comes your way. Now, starting off in South Africa, South Africa's parliament is having round table discussions on the regulation of podcasts. Let's take a listen to that.
Its portfolio committee on communications and digital technologies is expected to convene a high-level roundtable, which is expected to bring together podcasters, policymakers, regulators, and industry stakeholders. Now, while some people understand why this conversation is important, others are a little bit apprehensive. So let's get you more details on how all of this is going to pan out and what is the outcome at the end of this entire process. We speak now to the chairperson of Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Communications and Digital Technology. That's Ms. Kusela Diko. A very good evening to you, Kusela, and thank you so much for your time. So before you and I get into the fight, because some people are saying it's not necessary, others are saying it is, perhaps let's just start with how are you envisioning tomorrow panning out?
Good evening, Bongiwe, and good evening to your viewers. Thank you so much for inviting us. I honestly don't see what the trepidation is all about. Tomorrow is a conversation that we have convened as Parliament. I mean, we are a Parliament of the people. We have the responsibility to bring government, lawmakers, ourselves, the parliamentarians, the industry, podcast industry, association, civil society, academia. And we want to have a conversation about this rapidly growing podcast sector in South Africa. Over the last year alone, I think our mobile network operators were saying that they generated in excess of 100 billion rand, in data usage on social media as well as these platforms. And those who know podcasts, they know the nature of podcasts, they know the reach of podcasts, as well as the societal impact that podcasts have. So we want to talk about that within the context of what I call a very archaic legislative environment. I mean, the law governing what doesn't even govern podcasts, it's a law from 2005, and we need to see what a governance framework in this new digital age is supposed to look like.
So I'm going to get to the archaic legislation in just a moment, but you do have some who are saying that while they understand the need to regulate the space, the need to see that someone is actually making maybe factual, statements and all of that, others are saying that you've got Section 16 of the Constitution. It's already there. Do you need another layer?
Well, that's exactly the problem, Bongiwe, is that our legislation is fragmented. Yes, you've got Section 16, which speaks about freedom of expression and obviously how that is balanced with obviously, you know, a prohibition on incitement of violence, harmful speech and so forth. You also have the Cyber Crimes Act, which criminalizes, certain harmful content, the POPIA Act, I can go on and on. But none of this legislation is designed for this sector. As I indicated, we want to balance innovation, inclusion, but online safety. Now, one of the challenges that we've also come across is the fact that people who, for example, are aggrieved by the content of podcasts, they have nowhere to complain to. One might say that they may approach the courts, but we all know that process is expensive, that process is lengthy, and would wish that the sector, and I'm saying that we would wish and encourage the sector because we're not going there with a predetermined outcome. We would wish that the sector comes together like the broadcasting sector has done, like the press media in this country has done, and create a self-regulatory framework where they agree on a code of conduct, where they speak to ethics within the industry. I mean, right now, anybody with a camera, a microphone, and the light is literally a podcaster. And you find that these podcasts are even bigger than some of our traditional media platforms, bigger than certain radio stations in terms of reach. And we think that that carries a very big responsibility. And hence, we're encouraging this conversation to say, without, stifling anyone, without speaking to gag anybody, how do we ensure the safety, particularly of minors, particularly of the vulnerable? And how do we enhance, cultural expression through these podcasts? So ours is not a punitive approach to this. We do want to also look at how we can empower and support digital content creators beyond podcasts as well.
And there is a concern from some who are saying that opposed to all of this, it might be difficult for someone to start a podcast. It might then mean that they may have to jump through a few more hoops, which might make it difficult. What do you say to someone watching us tonight and has this very concern?
We're very cognizant, of that concern that certain people have, which is why the conversation is not about licensing. And I know that it's been framed a lot around regulation, but it's really about accountability. So we've looked at a number of international comparisons, countries like, the US, the UK, the EU, Brazil, Kenya. And part of the conversation is looking at platform accountability. More than the podcast. If we have a code of conduct, a code of ethics that these podcasters can work from, then when it comes to issues of accountability, we would like to hold the platforms accountable. I mean, in November of last year, government issued a paper, which was an audio and audiovisual services draft policy paper that seeks to bring them into the mainstream in terms of legislation. Now, if we are to say, platforms such as Twitter, such as YouTube, TikTok, all of these, by the way, we've invited to tomorrow's gathering as well. Those platforms carry a responsibility for what is put on the platform. So if there are any, transgressions in terms of the policies, then those platforms should be able to, for example, and I'm making examples here, should be able to implement takedown instructions where content is inappropriate, content is harmful within this regulatory framework that the industry would have defined for themselves. So I think right now it's still a bit too early, and I think a little bit too alarmist to think that the conversation is going to say they must register, they must license, they must do this and this. But we are definitely going to be looking at a model that is similar to what we currently have in the country, and which I believe you can attest to this, is working well where the industry regulates itself.
So two last questions then. The first one is, someone worried tonight unequivocally wants to hear from you that they should not be concerned about censorship when it comes to this particular meeting and the discussion going forward.
Bongiwe, we are lawmakers, and our primary responsibility is to uphold the Constitution. The Constitution of South Africa, Section 16 of the Constitution, guarantees freedom of expression in this country. However, all rights that are in the Constitution must be balanced with the rights of others through laws of general application. So we have absolutely no intention of shutting down voices that have never been heard before because they don't have the platforms to do it. We fully embrace, the digital transformation that's happening. We fully embrace what is becoming, new centers of entrepreneurship. Young people in particular are doing amazing things on those podcasts. But we must ensure, as I indicated earlier, that we protect not only them, but also the consumers of that content. And I do want to say that this is the first of many conversations. And I would think that perhaps it may be laudable, that Parliament has recognized to call the industry itself so they can co-create the solution that is going to work best given their understanding of their circumstances and dynamics that they face on a daily basis.
So another...
Interesting conversation right there. Wonder how South Africans are actually receiving it. But yeah, I'm sure we'll be able to tell within the course of time. Meanwhile, in regards to Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe is holding public debates on constitutional amendment bill.
Zimbabwe has published 65 meetings across the 10 provinces over a four-day period. Many are already concerned that the schedule is not sufficient to cover the views of the Zimbabwean population of 15 million.
We urge all of the people of Zimbabwe to turn up in their numbers at these public hearings. But you will also notice that these so-called public hearings are mere tokenism. For example, in Mashona and the West, I think there is no hearing in Murombedzi, Chinoyi, which are the area, VP, Karoi, and so on. We don't have public hearings at all. And I think in Harare, we have two. In a city of more than 4 million people, you have two centers. So this is mere tokenism to hoodwink the people that they've been consulting. This is a fiat accompli.
Civic organizations say the environment surrounding discussions on the bill has become increasingly hostile, making it difficult for citizens and activists to freely express their views on the proposed constitutional changes. They accuse state authorities of cracking down on their meetings, thereby undermining public debate.
The Constitution belongs to the people. Parliament cannot appropriate the sovereignty of the people. However, the executive has publicly rejected this position. Both the Attorney General and the Minister of Justice have publicly stated that there will be no referendum. Our position, therefore, remains clear. Without a referendum, there will be no legitimacy. Furthermore, we restate that amendments contained in this bill outside the term extension provisions represent democratic regression. For that reason, we reject this bill in its entirety.
Proponents of the bill have come out in full defense of the proposed amendments.
Constitutional amendments are underway across Africa and around the world. In mature democracies and developing nations as ours. So when we hear voices suggesting that Zimbabwe should not amend its constitution, we must ask, on what basis are France, South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, Malaysia, and Kazakhstan all acting improperly? Are they all destabilizing themselves? The evidence says otherwise. They are doing precisely what responsible nations do, refining their systems to meet the needs of their people.
Kandishaya argues that Zimbabwe is only following global precedents.
Even the United States, whose constitution is deliberately difficult to amend, he has done so 27 times. The most recent amendment was ratified in 1992, more than two centuries after the constitution was written. And I must tell you that there are ongoing discussions in the United States of America where they are working towards bringing up a bill to remove term limits, obviously, after seeing the rapid development in the People's Republic of China.
Meanwhile, President Hakainde Hichilema of Zambia calls for deeper Zambia and EU partnership.
President Hakainde Hichilema this morning met a delegation from European Union and COMESA at State House. President Hichilema has emphasized the need for Zambia and the EU to deepen their partnership. He highlighted the importance of joint ventures and investments between Africa and European countries.
We are focusing on growth now. When we took public office, Cadres of the People of Zambia, God's will, People of Zambia, Cadres of the People of Zambia, was to basically restore the country's economy by and large. And the key components there included the debt restructuring, for which we're grateful in terms of your support. But we just want to make sure that we continue putting to bed, consummating the outstanding elements of the debt restructuring. I think we've been doing that with bilateral members of the EU. So I would suggest that as part of this dialogue, we pencil in, you know, some action there to put to bed the residual work that is left to be done in or under the debt restructuring, because that's an important aspect for us to build on the growth agenda.
He also expressed concern about the impacts of global events such as the Russia-Ukraine war on Zambia's economy and bilateral partnerships.
I also want to emphasize, I know you did cover that, the importance of us working together on the geopolitical situation that has evolved dramatically. I think from the time that this dialogue was held before February 1, the situation was slightly different. We're dealing more with Ukraine, Russia. Now we have the Iran war, and it's a difficult situation. And I think the impact of that will be grave on our own relationship, our own partnership, given that the war there in the Middle East is expanding. And we do not want to see an expansion of the war there, because the damage which is already been done is too much. It's just one aspect, the increase in the fuel prices. So it should disturb our macro stability agenda. So it is that sort of environment, evolving environment, that require our partnership to address these issues together for mutual benefit, mutual good, but also for driving whatever small way we can global peace, security, and stability, which is really an operating environment that, if it's disturbed, as we have seen in the Ukraine-Russia war, and we've been very pleased for us ourselves to remain consistent on those issues. We are anti-conflict as a country.
EU Ambassador to Zambia, Kalorina Stasiak, expressed gratitude for Zambia's active participation in the partnership dialogue.
Our discussions took place in a rapidly evolving global context of geopolitical tensions, economic uncertainty, pressures on multilateralism, and the growing urgency of climate action.
As the public hearings are part of the 90-day public consultation window stipulated in the constitution of the country, however, there are growing fears of possible violence and disruption
of the dialogue of the was also hearings. Zambia's economic transformation and resilience. Through Global Gateway, Team Europe is scaling up its engagement to support sustainable growth in Zambia. Our approach is comprehensive and long-term, and we call it a 360-degrees approach, where investments in infrastructure are accompanied by policy support, targeted initiatives in skills development, support to private sector growth, and strengthening of local value chains. In the dialogue, reviewed in particular the progress on the Lobito Corridor, which stands out as a flagship initiative with the potential to transform connectivity in the region and unlock new trade and investment opportunities in Zambia.
Reporting for Zanisi in Lusaka, I am Tizawa Namlinga.
Meanwhile, experts are calling for a stronger push to unlock AFCFTA potential, that is Africa Continental Free Trade Area potential.
It's shaping up to be a turbulent decade for African economies as relentless geopolitical shocks weigh on growth and stability. From the pandemic to the Russia-Ukraine war, renewed trade tensions under Donald Trump, and an escalating Middle East conflict, the fallout is driving inflation, debt, and uncertainty.
Although we're on the back of decreasing inflation in many of the sub-Saharan African markets, this will have an impact on prices. One of the wonderful attributes of businesses on the African continent is its agility and its resilience. And no doubt that businesses will find a way to see through this conflict. Having said that, I do think that there will be pain economically, certainly for the short run.
Africa is being forced to look inward, but challenges remain. Despite the promise of a single market under the African Continental Free Trade Area, moving goods across the continent is still slow and costly, held back by port bottlenecks, aging rail networks, and unreliable energy supply.
If you're looking at how long it takes a truck in Africa's ecosystem to get across the border, it's days. For this to really work, we need seamless integration, less talk and more action. And if we look at just a simple thing such as the access to capital, Africa's entrepreneurship and SME ecosystem makes up about 18% of Africa's GDP across the board, but investment is only 0.6%.
The change is underway according to the Standard Bank's Africa Barometer. The continent is on a positive trajectory as business confidence improves and investment gains pace.
We've seen supply chains move towards more intra-Africa trade as an alternative and looking more east and particularly China. From an intra-Africa perspective, infrastructure is improving. It's becoming easier to trade with ourselves. There's policies like the example used between Uganda and Kenya, making it easier for countries to trade with each other.
New digital payments and pan-African settlement systems are also reducing reliance on external currencies, cutting transaction costs and making cross-border trade easier.
It is significant to bring it closer to currencies and currency exchanges that are realistic for the economy that we operate in. We cannot be operating on dollars when a dollar is so expensive. It could mean, one, that capital is affordable. It could mean that trade is easier and more accessible. And it also would mean that things move faster.
Higher commodity prices offered some respite from the global fallout. The question now is how fast African nations can shift from extractive to high-value economies to strengthen regional supply chains and accelerate industrialization. Julie Shara, CHTN, Cape Town.
Meanwhile, Nigerian refinery has begun fuel exports to Africa. Let's hear more.
Hello and welcome to Eye on Africa on France 24. I'm Vedika Bahel, and here's the top headlines from across the continent. Expanding its export. Need a story from our team on the ground. Thank you for joining us. 156,000 tons of oil to five countries announced Sunday it had sold a total of 456,000 tons of oil to five countries: Cameroon, Togo, Tanzania, Ghana, and the Ivory Coast. Historically dependent on imports from the Middle East and Europe, this comes as Nigeria seeks to position Dangote as a strategic alternative for African nations, as Clement Waller explains.
Ivory Coast, Cameroon, Togo, Ghana, and Tanzania. These five African countries are now turning to the Nigerian Dangote refinery to meet their oil needs. In total, more than 450,000 tons of hydrocarbons have been delivered to them since the start of the war in the Middle East, a way to limit the economic consequences of the conflict, which has been marked by soaring fuel prices.
By supplying neighbors and other economies, the Dangote refinery is expected to contribute to enhanced energy security in West, East and Central Africa.
Before the refinery opened in 2024, Nigeria had to import nearly all of its fuel and shortages were common. Today, the plant has a production capacity of 650,000 barrels per day and is committed to prioritizing the domestic market. This initiative is part of the government's vision to establish Nigeria as a major player in the oil industry.
The world consumes about 105, 106 million barrels per day. I don't see that changing that much anytime soon. So we need to work together so that we have enough hydrocarbons available.
With the Strait of Hormuz remaining virtually closed, the refinery could also see a surge of European orders, notably for jet fuel.
Staying in Nigeria, EU Foreign Commissioner Kaya Kallas met with the country's foreign minister and regional organizations in Abuja. She highlighted the long-term security partnership between the European Union and Nigeria, commending the country's efforts in combating terrorism against insurgent groups. She also reiterated how the bloc was contributing over the past decade. Let's take a listen.
Over the past decade, we have mobilized more than 700 million euros to support counterterrorism, stabilization, rule of law, and the multinational joint task force. But our cooperation is not only tactical, it's also strategic. Earlier this year, we launched the first EU-Nigeria peace, security, and defense dialogue, and this is how we turn our partnership into action, by defining the priorities and strengthening cooperation.
Around 200 suspected jihadists were released in Mali in recent days, a Malian security source told news agency AFP Monday. Since September, jihadists from Jenin, affiliated with Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State, have caused fuel chaos and shortages by attacking tanker convoys, which at the height of the crisis in October brought the capital, Bamako, to a standstill. On Sunday, multiple sources reported that the release was in exchange for the opening of a corridor to allow tankers to pass. The agreement will remain in place until the end of May, sources told AFP. Next, a new report from NGO WaterAid has found that 76% of births in sub-Saharan Africa take place in healthcare facilities without basic water, hygiene and sanitation, meaning millions of babies are being born every few seconds in rooms where staff cannot wash their hands or women cannot wash themselves. The report also gives insight into the scale of maternal sepsis. In sub-Saharan Africa alone, 1 in 9 births results in maternal sepsis, and those mothers are 144 times more likely to die than those in North America and Western Europe. Well, for more on this, let's bring in WaterAid's Zambia country director, Yanko Mataya, speaking to us from Lusaka in Gambia. Thank you for joining us here on Eye on Africa. I want to start with a more general overview. Can you tell us a little bit about why the statistics and the water sanitation gap in sub-Saharan Africa is so high? What are the main reasons for that?
Oh, yes, thank you very much, Fadila. The situation is indeed dire, and correct that we are seeing very high numbers of maternal sepsis cases as well as associated deaths in sub-Saharan Africa. I'm not sure that in this time it's acceptable for us to be losing as many as 36 mothers every single day because the healthcare facilities that they're getting maternal care from don't have essential basics such as clean water, decent sanitation, as well as good hygiene to practice effective infection prevention and control. The major thing that we have seen as a gap is not really the lack of political will. We did see the adoption of the World Health Assembly resolution on washing healthcare facilities, and we've seen that cascaded all the way down into countries. So we're not lacking in terms of will and direction or commitment to change the situation. What really is lacking is the investment towards actually transforming the situation and making a change by making those services available in different in healthcare settings within Africa.
Now, it might seem like a basic question, but I feel like many people might not have thought about it in so much detail. But can you tell us why is water so essential in birth and delivery?
Yes, a strong health system does require access to safe, clean water to practice good infection prevention and control. The mothers themselves do need clean water during different procedures. So when they come in for their delivery and they stay in the healthcare facility, after delivery, they need to wash up. They need clean water to clean their babies with. But we find ourselves experiencing cases where women can't even have a bath after delivery. They have to wait a day or two until they get home and they're in soiled clothes before they can actually deliver. It's also important from a dignity standpoint. So in communities where we have supported as WaterAid by improving water sanitation and hygiene in healthcare facilities, we actually do see that facility-based deliveries do increase and home-based deliveries reduce. We understand that home-based deliveries pose their own type of risks. In the event of complications, there's no professional to deal with things, or women choose to delay coming into the hospital for deliveries, and we see that significantly improve where wash is available. And healthcare workers as well, both their morale and their ability to provide quality care does depend on having clean water on hand at all critical points of care, including in delivery rooms. But sadly, you speak with healthcare workers who are forced to conduct unsafe deliveries that don't have access to clean water because it's just not there in the space that they're practicing in. And these are some of the realities that we get to see.
And Yanko, this report draws on the testimonies of women from Malawi and Uganda. Could you give us a brief insight into what some of their experiences are like? Are there any stories that have really stood out to you?
Yes, there are many stories, given the scale of the problem that we have. And I can recall particular stories of women that went to have a delivery. There's one particular case study, a woman narrates her experience of going in to deliver and not being able to take a bath after her delivery. So she had to be kept in the facility post-delivery with her soiled clothes, and she then had to wait and only be able to change her clothes and take a bath after she had gone home, and the same for her baby as well. And unfortunately, in some instances, women are not so fortunate. So you find mothers lose their lives or babies lose their lives because of that lapse in terms of having this essential resource that is so critical for care.
And Yanko, I want to turn now to maternal sepsis in sub-Saharan Africa. The statistics are very shocking. There's 36 mothers estimated to be losing their lives every single day, 13,000 annually. What are the solutions and investments in sanitation that could prevent such high numbers?
Yes, what we need is now the translation of the good intentions that we see in terms of national plans and global commitments that have been made towards increasing access to water, sanitation and hygiene and healthcare facilities. And we know from the study that has been conducted that actually investing in these critical things, particularly the water supply, is in fact more cost effective than having to treat sepsis and also having to manage the loss that comes in case of death happening. And we know that healthcare facilities that do have adequate water, and if this was achieved at a global scale, we can actually reduce the cases of sepsis by as many as 10 million women. It can go down by 50%, and the deaths can also go down by as much as 50%. Over 8,000 lives can be saved by providing these essential services. I don't see that there is a greater price to pay than the loss of human life. And so by averting avoidable deaths, I would think that that would be the ultimate return, in addition to the financial returns.
And with that, we've come to the conclusion after this episode of On The Reader News Analysis. Do stay tuned now for the Onkonana Dengue program, brought to you by Lois Chimi and the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30. Don't forget the business economic segment with David Chombe from 1800 hours. From Indafa Happy Juju, this goodbye.